Good morning. It's so good to be with all of you. You've been so incredibly kind, so welcoming, so open. I am thrilled to be here. This is the first of many, many conversations, and I'm not going to pack everything you need to know about me into this morning. I'm going to give you a little tidbits along the way. I wanted to start first by talking about my love for plants. I have, through the years, kept orchids and different things that I love caring for. Do we have any plants parents in the house? We identify as plant parents there. And to be a plant parent, that doesn't mean your plant babies have to stay alive, okay? We do our best, but we try and we learn and we get to know. And we have certain kids that are just problem kids, right, when it comes to plants. I love a diversity of plants. I have a friend of mine who has a cannabis farm, and I occasionally go over and help him with some harvest and trimming. But one of my favorite things to do is this process called de-leafing. It's a type of pruning you do to encourage growth. Anybody who has done anything, I know we're in West Michigan, so your yards look better than mine ever dreamed it could be. I get that. But you know that there's a principle that if you like prune something back, you allow the plant to put more energy into the things that matter. Sometimes if you're growing a certain crop, you want to encourage growth into the production of buds or flowers or beans or produce instead of the leaves. So we do this process called de-leafing. And these plants grow big and vigorous. There's a reason that it's called weed. I mean, they grow like weeds. They're very prolific plants. And so they're reaching up towards the lights, and they're growing all big. And it's one of my favorite stages to see the plant because they're just so alive and so vibrant. And then we come in with clippers, and we just give it like a haircut, like the kind of haircut that you got as a kid that you were like embarrassed to go out and show your friends for a week. Like, we take so much off. And as a plant person, I used to be really, like, heartbroken at how much we would take off and the state we would leave the plants in. Like, I was apologizing to the plants as I'm trimming them back. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He told me to do it. Brian is my friend. He's the one. And he's a little bit more aggressive than I am. So when we do our de-leafing, we all are kind of plant lovers, and we're trying to do our best, and then we always ask WWBD, what would Brian do? So Brian comes in, and we're like, Brian, what'd we do? And he comes in, he looks at the bottom, he's like, nope, snaps this off, this, cut this off, and he even goes in there more aggressively, and we're trying to learn. Now, the thing is, when we walk away, the room is just like bare, and it looks like we have just taken the life out of these plants, but you come back, even in a matter of days, and you see these plants start to pop back. And as a matter of fact, the very things that we took away allowed the plants to become even more healthy, to produce better, and to put its energy into the thing that mattered. We're talking about this morning for a couple weeks the idea of being in the land between, this in-between space. We were talking about it in pre-talk, and the word came up, liminal. And I'm sure that that's probably a phrase that's familiar to most of you, this idea of liminal space, being in between something. Liminal comes from this root word, limen, which is really a transition. It's actually kind of like a door frame or a door post. There's a limen. There's a threshold that you cross. And so when you cross this threshold, you are entering a limen, a liminal space, a transition place from where you were going through somewhere into something else. Okay, so examples of that in the world would be things like airports, things like hallways, where you're starting out in one place, you're going somewhere else. Some of you grew up to the point where you remember the transition where air travel was not as much of a thing that people did, and now we take it for granted. I have done trips around the world, Scotland and Africa, and it never ceases to amaze me that you can show up at an airport, and yes, that whole process is stressful as can be, but you show up at the airport, and you go through all the things, you check your bags, and they ask you all the questions, you go through, and you sit down in this tube, and then you leave your place where you were, and then you walk out into somewhere different. You have gone through this transitional place, this liminal space. There's hallways, there's doorways, there's lobbies, bridges. We see these examples of liminal space in our own bodies, as we talked about even just this morning beforehand. Our bodies are going through this transition all the time. Just the amount of cells that die and the new ones that are born. You are not physically, biologically, the same person, the same physical makeup that you were 10 years ago. How wild is that? Who are we and what are we made of? And what does it look like when we go through these transitional places? But our bodies go through these transitions, not just over 10 years, but like with every single breath. Something that you've been doing since you've walked in that you probably haven't paid attention until we just start talking about it. Your breath. Every breath in is this liminal transition because it starts first by breathing out. In breath work, we call that retention breath. So there's breath holds we do at the top, and then there's breath retentions at the bottom. And every single time, it starts first by emptying our lungs. Do we often think that when we do that, that we don't have a guarantee that that next breath in is going to sustain us, but we just assume that it will because we live on a planet where oxygen is abundant. But every single breath is a transition. Every single heartbeat. We are going through these liminal spaces in life. And it's not just physical liminal spaces. We go through this in existential ways, in emotional ways. Deaths of loved ones, of family members, of spouses, divorce, diagnoses. Chances are probably if we were to sit down in a nice big circle and just kind of pass the mic around and just have some fun and share some stories, I bet you there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories that you could share that we would all be enlightened with about the transitions you have been through in life. A few weeks ago, I'm trying to remember when, we did a practice where we, the speaker had us like look in each other's eyes, and I sat right here, and we joked as we came in this morning, like I know this couple more intimately than I know probably anybody else in this community, because like we were staring in each other's eyes, and all I could think of as we were doing that is the depth of the stories. Have you ever looked into somebody's eyes and just like seen the wrinkles on their face, the color of their hair, their glasses, their story, and recognized that every single thing represents a story, a past, transitions, liminal times that you go through? Pregnancy was brought up this morning, and it is probably one of the most appropriate things that the women in this room have had to experience, those of you who have gone through that transition with your bodies, to have a new life emerge from within you, to have that 9-month liminal period of the waiting. My wife and I have gone through that a few times, and it is both exciting, it's challenging. You're looking forward with hope, and you're also like scared to death that you're going to mess it up. We talked a little bit about how transitions, these liminal spaces that we go through, have a way of seeming so huge when we go through them. But it's only in the process of looking back that we begin to recognize or say things like, I was stronger than I knew. Someone shared an example that was more pertinent in my family's story. My mom recently lost her husband. My dad died a couple of years back, and she's been sharing with us recently what it's like being an 81-year-old adult who is having to live on their own for the first time in years. That's a huge liminal space. That's a huge transition. But the thing is this, what I love and what I tell my mom is how proud I am of her, because it is only in these difficult spaces, only in these transitionary times, that we discover our resilience, the depth of what we're actually capable of. Have you ever gone through something that you did not think for sure, like you were positive, like it was going to drown you, you were not going to make it through, and then you get through on the other side and you're like, why did I why did I get so freaked out over that? Like, I actually had more in me than I realized. In the same way that those plants get those super, super close haircuts and may feel like we're taking the very life out of them, it's simply the removal of one thing that makes room for something else. Richard Rohr, who I'm sure you've read a lot of or heard him quoted a lot, he talks about this way. He says, liminal space is a unique spiritual position where human beings hate to be. It's where you have left the tried and true, but have not yet been able to replace it with anything else. It's when you're in between your old comfort zone and any possible new answer. You're going to want to run anything to flee this terrible cloud of unknowing. It's true. We as human beings hate these transitions. Our bodies, our minds, our psyches crave homeostasis. My wife and I, the reason I picked this topic is because my wife and I, our family, has been going through some transitions in the last few years. It felt like we have just rolled from one transition into a next. Or if you were to map it out, I would say, like, there's like transitions within transitions within transitions, right? Like, the depth of things that we have gone through in the last year have almost just given us there have been times where we just sort of want to throw our hands up in the air and like, I don't even have any control over what's happening, and so let's just see what comes next, which is really the most appropriate way to respond when we go through these, right? Because it's not the control that we lose when we go through these transitions, it's the illusion of control. We think we had everything under control. We think we've had our life mapped out and everything is good. You've probably been in that point in your life. You're married, you've got your jobs, you've got things going on, and you're like, everything is finally clicking. Everything is finally working. Your community, you've got a lead teacher, you've got things going, things are exciting, and then you find out some news that just rocks your community to the core. And then you begin to wonder, what are we going to do? How are we going to get through this? Is this our end? But this is part of this ongoing cycle, isn't it? It's this liminal space that we can't escape from because it is simply a part of life. We're in liminal spaces all the time. The question is how much we actually recognize it. Are we actually paying attention to it? Because to be something new, to start something new, there has to be an ending of what was. And that's the part we don't like. We want new. We want exciting. We want the weight loss without the diet. We want the healthy body without going through the workout routine to get there. We want to be able to run marathons without having to do the training program. We want to be able to have the things that we want and to become the person that we are, but we don't often think about the price that we pay. And there's times we have choices. We can choose whether the price is too high. And then there's other times where it's thrust upon us. I'm thinking of those moments where you get that call in the middle of the night and there's that loved one that has passed away. There's that tragic situation that happens. And our family has had our share of that too. In those deep and dark moments, it is so easy to get stuck into a despair where you think, how in the world am I going to get out of this? One of my favorite books that I've given out to people along the way, or I've made reference to, I think her name is Kate Bowler, if I'm not mistaken, but the book is called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. There's actually a great appendix in the back of that book because she talked about how she went through a cancer diagnosis and all the things that people said to her when she went through that. Everything happens for a reason. God has a plan. You've heard it all. And there's nothing more infuriating than someone from the outside looking in at your time of tragedy, at your time of difficult transition, saying, oh, it's all right. You're going to be okay. Everything happens for a reason. You're going to be okay. You're stronger than you know. All those platitudes, when really what we need is somebody to see us in the middle of it and recognize that these transitions are tough and they can sap the life out of us. They can seem like the definite ending of a story. It can seem like the closing of a chapter, and we don't know what the next chapter is. I'm a movie and TV guy, and we don't have as much of this anymore. I'm kind of disappointed, but I love the shows that have always had those cliffhangers. I kind of grew up in the era when Lost was a big thing coming out, right? And like Lost, you just didn't know what the heck was happening in that show. And there's that eager anticipation, and it is like, I don't know, what is the smoke monster, and what's happening, what's going on? And in our lives, we can approach it one of a couple ways. We can either sit and hide in fear or try to stick our head in the sand and blind ourselves to all the things that are happening around us. And to be fair, sometimes that is what you need to do. Sometimes you just need a good cry and a swear in the corners. We found out this morning. Somebody said that was probably one of the things that was most helpful. And absolutely, we need that. But there's times, too, where we also pick ourselves up and we keep going, and we also find that we're stronger than we know. Next, I want to quote a great author, profound author that you've probably read, Dr. Seuss, who wrote in his great book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, about this kind of thing. You've seen that book, the Oh, the Places You'll Go? It's a big graduation book. He writes about this time in our life. He says, you can get so confused that you'll start into race down long, wiggled roads at a breaknecking pace, headed, I fear, towards a most useless place, the waiting place. For people just waiting. Waiting for a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. The waiting place is not fun. We don't like the waiting place. We don't like being in waiting places. I mean, who likes being at the is it the BMV, DMV here in Michigan there? I get them confused. When you go to have to get your driver's license, right, and you get the tickets. When you're in the lobby at the doctor's office, nobody says, you know what, I'm going to show up there an extra hour early, and I hope I want to sit just because I want to flip through all the magazines while I'm there. Like, we crave distractions. And I'm speaking from experience. Anytime I'm stuck waiting, what do? We'll pull out phones, we'll do anything to try to distract us from this time of waiting. That probably says a lot about us as a culture. The fact that we don't like waiting and our capacity for waiting has diminished, keeps getting shorter. But it is in these transitionary times, it is in this liminal space that the stories that matter are being written. Your story, our story, C3's story, this 150-plus year crazy, crazy history has been filled with these transitionary moments that could have and probably in the moment felt like they were an end to everything. We know what that feels like because our lives are full of that. As somebody mentioned this morning, like, that is the very nature of life. The Buddha says life is suffering. Life has these moments of transition, and we can either make peace with them and sit with them, or we plow through them, we ignore them, we try to conquer them even. I don't know what it is in our Western mindset that feels like challenges are obstacles that must be conquered, and we think in this approach of like, there's a mountain ahead and I'm going to climb it, but sometimes the transitions that we look like, that we go through, don't feel like climbing a mountain. Because when there's a mountain, we climb to the top and you have that mountaintop experience. And yes, there are those in life. But sometimes what transitions feel like is being lost in the woods. It's wandering. It's confusion. It's I don't know where I am and I don't know what's next. It's a scary place to be. John Philip Newell, he has written a lot about Celtic spirituality. I had the chance to do a pilgrimage with him in Iona, Scotland, back in 2016. He wrote a lot about Celtic spirituality that helped inform my deconstruction journey when I was kind of going through my journey through Christianity. He helped put words to a lot of the things that I was feeling. But specifically, I loved the idea that the Celts had in terms of liminal spaces. In Celtic lore, there's the idea of thin space. Maybe you've heard that expression. That there's places in this world where the veil between this world and the next is thin. Not in a literal sense, but you probably have maybe experienced these thin spaces in your own life. You know, it's that moment at a bedside when that person passes and you realize that you're in this in-between state and there's like every part of your attention is aware of what you're going through. And the Celts believe that there are these thin spaces, not only physical location, but times in our own lives. Because as I think Rod mentioned before, liminal space does not just refer to geographical spaces like hallways and tunnels, right? We go through them in our own lives. And this transition that we go through, this thin space, there are moments in our lives where the veil between, I wouldn't say this world and the next, but the veil between ourselves and the world that is can be thinner so we can see things with more clarity than perhaps we have at any other point. He writes this, "Into this liminal realm, between the known and the unknown, we're invited to enter if we want to learn more of the way forward in our lives as individuals, as communities, as nations. This is why in so much Celtic storytelling and legends, lovers meet and worlds can join in the twilights. It is in the coming together of the masculine and the feminine. This is also why in so much Eastern spiritual practice, as well as in monastic communities, that the early hours of dawn are viewed as the time of meditation, when night and day are commingling in ways that more readily allow us to move from the known to the unknown, from the nameable to the ineffable." I want to sit for just a minute with that last word as we kind of like wrap up today. Liminal spaces defy our ability to predict, because if we can predict what's going to happen, by its very nature, that transition loses some of the tension, right? We've been through those moves where we're moving somewhere new, for a new job and a new place. And yeah, those are difficult transitions, but I think somebody mentioned this morning, have you ever had the move where you're moving somewhere new and you don't have the job or the job fell through? Somebody mentioned, getting married in the first week of their marriage, like, what did I do? We have had those times of like, what in the world is going on? The indescribable, the ability to not predict what's next is the hallmark of these liminal experiences in our lives. And if we sit with them, if we pay attention to them, if we let them talk to us and tell us what it is that we need to learn, we'll find that oftentimes those things that we thought were the death of us were actually just simply opening us up for more. It's so much easier to look back with hindsight on our transitions, our liminal times in life, because we've come through them. Look at, we're alive. We've made it. Every single tough thing that you have been through, the good news is you made it, and you're here. But we don't have that guarantee, do we? And there's this sense of sitting with the unknowable, to move from the known to the unknown, from the nameable to the ineffable. It is in these times of transition that we should relish the opportunities to sit with what we don't know, to feel all of the feelings, all of the fear, all of the anxiety, all of the anger, all of the frustration, all of the screaming and shaking our hands at the sky saying, why in the world did this have to come together? We had everything all figured out. When our best laid plans go sideways, But it is in those moments that stories are written and lives are changed, and we have the tools within us. You don't need somebody telling you everything happens for a reason. You don't need an external plan to make sense of the things that you're going through, because what you have within you is the resilience that is born of going through tough things and making it. And not only making it, but here's why I'm personally excited about this community. Within this community, there are so many stories from so many of you wonderful, wonderful, beautiful souls who have gone through things that generations coming up don't have the idea for, because the 20s, the 30s, the 40-year-olds are oftentimes so tunnel vision, moving through life, going through transition after transition, like a car speeding by the highway and missing all the flowers around. You have stories that need to be told. You have transitions you've been through, these liminal spaces, and that you've come through and survived, because we all could learn to walk through these places better. I want to conclude with one last quote that's in your bulletin. I love this. There's a great book by Barbara Brown Taylor called Learning to Walk in the Dark. She says, I've learned things in the dark that I could have never learned in the light. Things have saved my life over and over again. So really, there's only one logical conclusion. I need darkness as much as I need the light. My hope for us is that as we engage in this new liminal state, this new transition as a community, that we keep our eyes and our ears open, that we embrace the difficulty of the unknown, that we embrace the newness of a new season without clinging to the past and saying, well, why wasn't it like this? Because it is only in the removal of things that we get to have new things emerge. And it is only with the death of things that new life can be born. This is the cycle of life. This is what we go through. But we can emerge through on the other side with a strength and a resilience that we didn't have. And there's stories to be told and people that need to be encouraged through this process as well. I want to invite our musician back up, who just did an amazing job on these songs that I feel are so powerful, because there are things that can be said with words and there are things that need to be said with music and the arts, and I love when things come together in that way where you can experience and sit with that dichotomy of transition. And so as we kind of conclude, I want to sit with that tension. I want to feel that uncomfortableness that comes from not knowing what's ahead, but also recognizing that what is behind and the things that conclude prepare us for a new future and new things that are ahead.